Facing the challenges of Amazon selling in 2024, today on This Week with Sabir, we're tackling the key issues head on with a combined lifetime experience of 50 plus years between the two of us, me and Kevin King. So we'll be talking about Amazon's ever-changing algorithms, goddamn algorithms, distinguishing your products in a flooded marketplace, plenty of saturation from all over the world, right? And navigating the latest policy updates. And we will definitely hit on a lot of the mishaps that's happening with AI with Amazon in 2024. So it's all definitely is affecting us. I'm your host, Sabir Samarkand, and with me is the legendary Kevin King, a name that resonates across the e-commerce landscape. I do want to bring this up because I want to put up the accolades as I talk about your experience. Here we go. Right? So not just an innovator, he's a pioneer with achievements that speak volumes, creator of the $1 billion seller newsletter and the seller summit, architect behind the Freedom Ticket with 160,000 students. And I've actually personally have taken your course, by the way, because I always keep my pulse, my finger on the pulse of all the different educators and everybody who puts out content. I do consume it. So it's not just newbies. There are people like me too. And we have a special offer for the $1 billion summit, seller summit in this episode when I brought on Kevin. So he was gracious enough to give us a very special discount for This Week with Sabir audience members. So stay tuned for that. We will definitely share it. And he is a figure celebrated for selling 8 figures in both physical and digital products online. But there is more, definitely the coupon, be on the lookout for that discount summit for the summit. And I think gear up, between me and Kevin, we will definitely, this will be an hour of education. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me on, Sabir. It's going to be great. Love to talk shop with someone that is really been around for a while and knows their salt from their pepper as well.
Kevin, I think you'll appreciate this. This used to be a full set of hair before dealing with Amazon. All of this is gone.
Follicle. I used to have long hair down my back, and I started selling.
Every follicle is a $1 million incremental revenue for my clients and my brands. Every follicle that I lost.
It's just like in football, the players in the high school, they get the little stickers on their helmet. We just get the hairs pulling out.
Maybe I'll go with tattoos now.
There you go.
Amazon, you go. Shopify, WooCommerce. $1 billion.
There you go.
So today, there's plenty of content. Like I said, I consume a lot of content on YouTube, all the digital courses and stuff like that. I want the 60 minutes to be a super masterclass in Amazon. Both of us will contribute to that $1 billion, so that whoever's watching this, they're gonna get every second paid for, basically.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Right. And I don't want to talk about, because everybody talks about all these, we increased the revenue here, there. The thing is, there's plenty of scars you and I have. And we know not everything passes mustard, right? Even when you're successful, you're going to fail, right? There's definitely something's going to go wrong. Even though you're doing everything right, there's an algorithm change, right? And for 25 years, I'm sure that you have plenty of battle stories.
Well, there doesn't have to be an algorithm change either. You're doing everything right, and there's just Amazon. And you can lose millions of dollars like I did a few years ago. It doesn't have to be an algorithm change.
I mean, we'll definitely go into those battle scars. You and I can definitely share some of those. And with the lessons learned, so that the audience can really get real value from it, So let's start. Let's do this. The way we want to structure this is we have an hour together, right? Beginners, intermediate sellers, and advanced sellers, right? So we'll break it up into three parts there. So let's talk about the beginners, right? There's plenty of content out there that shows you how to pick your first product and so on and so forth. So the question for you is not that easy, right? Because we're on This Week with Sabir.
That's right.
Right? Right, you have $5 billion to your name, right? From selling, I have $1 billion in my name. So let's try to give value here. So, what are the common pitfalls in selecting your first Amazon product?
Well, the number one, there's a couple of things that people mess up when they first select. number one is you never want to go by what you see online where someone uses an example, you know, or they say, here's a PDF of the top 100 best opportunities on Amazon, or they use it as an example in a teaching. You need to run from all that stuff. That's number one. I don't know how many 3PLs have told me that after some big webinar comes out, all of a sudden they get 122 people doing weighted baby blankets or something. So that's number one. Number two is you need to actually differentiate the product. You've got to find out, you can't just put your logo on it and say, well, it comes with a PDF guidebook of how to cook some recipes on this crepe maker or whatever. You got to truly differentiate the product. If you can come up with an original product, that's all the better, that nobody else has ever done. But differentiation, and by differentiation, I'll give you a quick example on that. It's not necessarily about the category. I mean, a lot of people say the riches are in the niches. So niche down, don't go after some big general thing. But that's not always necessarily true. On Amazon, a lot of people think it's all about price, the lowest price. And there are commodities and there are things that it definitely is all about the price. But there's other places where it's not about the price. Two quick examples on that, and I'll elaborate on one of them. One of them, I used to sell makeup brushes. So I would go on, and the word makeup brush is a hugely popular term on Amazon, makeup brush set. And I'm like, I used to work with a lot of models and a lot of makeup artists. And I'm like, I'm going to put together a killer makeup brush set that comes in like a leather case. And it has all these, I asked all the makeup artists and the models, what would you like if you could have the perfect makeup set? What would be in it? I created this product from scratch. I sourced it from all over. Tried to launch this product on Amazon, and I couldn't launch it because for the word makeup brush, makeup brush set, makeup brush collection, everything is all these inexpensive stuff from Asia that's going for like $5.99 or $6.99. And my set was $40. And so I could do a launch. And back in these days, you could do search, find, buy. You could do, you know, there's different services that don't exist now where you could launch to page one really quick. But I could never stick the landing. I could never stay there because my price point was $40. They were $5.99. I could not compete on the price. And so everything on that page, I would just get filtered down. And so it just didn't work in that category for me. But so what I had to do is I had to come out with a loss leader. I had to come out with a variation where I'd say, here's two brushes for $5.99. And when they would click through to that, here would be my $39, you know, master set with a nice leather case, and I would upsell. So I was able to kind of wiggle my way around that indirectly. But another better example is bully sticks. Bully sticks are dog treats. They're made from a cow, from excess pieces of a cow, and they're super popular for dogs to gnaw and chew on. Well, most people that are selling these as like a plastic bag with like 30 sticks in it. They look like straws basically. So there's 6-inch ones and there's 12-inch ones. So they would sell a plastic bag of 30 of these. They just stick a logo on there, call it Kevin's Bully Sticks or whatever. And here you go, $29.99. And everybody's basically the same. I started analyzing that market a few years ago. And like, you know what? This could be a good opportunity. I love dogs. I know a lot about dogs. My dog likes eating treats. How can I differentiate this product? Could I find a factory and get it cheaper? Maybe. Could I put a nicer label on it? Maybe. Could I do 31 sticks instead of 30? I was like, no, none of that makes sense. So I started reading all the reviews. And this is before there was AI tools and all these tools that would scrape the reviews and do all this summary for you. I manually went through like 5,000 reviews with my eyes and found the patterns of what people were complaining about. And they were complaining about when a dog chews these, it stinks because these are made from the penis of a cow is what they're made from. So there's a little bit of a foul odor sometimes, depending on the processing. And then they stain, you know, the dog jumps up on the couch or on the carpet and there's a little bit of just a stain. So I was like, how can I differentiate this? What if I could, instead of going to the one of these mass producers, what if I could find a manufacturer that it does these high end, like, you know, pets are important to people. Some people treat their pets like their kids and they're willing to spend whatever, all crazy dollars on it. So I found this in New Hampshire, this guy that was a chef by trade, a classically trained French chef that opened up this little small boutique like pet supply place. And he was doing all kinds of different pet supplies, but he was like doing it by hand, you know, like this is homemade, not on some big machine. I was like, hey, this would be great. One of the big other problems people complain about is these sticks or that, where's this beef coming from? There's a big scare about Chinese beef or Brazilian beef and everybody wanted made in the USA. So this guy was using made in the USA. So that checked off one box. He was hand doing it. And they were expensive though, because instead of little straws, his were like big, thick sticks. But they didn't stink. They had to put it through a 17-step organic process, so that's good marketing. But his sticks were expensive. There's no way I could sell 30 of these for $30 in a plastic bag. So what I decided to do is I decided to create a really high-end bully stick. And so I found a supplier close to him, in Brooklyn, that could make these like cigar boxes. Looks like nice fancy cigar box. And I made these nice fancy cigar boxes to hold 6-inch and 12-inch. I shipped them up to him. I made this really nice label with a texture on it. When you feel it, it's got this like little texture, and it just looks really classy. He made these sticks, put them in the boxes. We shipped them on Amazon. I sold 3 sticks of a 12-inch version for $54.95. Now, mind you, everybody else is selling 30 for $30 basically in a plastic bag. I sold the 6-inch ones, 6 of them, for $49.95 in a box. And I put up my listings, and if I just put up the listings and look like everybody else, there's no way I could compete. But when I put up the listings, I created the imagery. People on Amazon, it's a mistake a lot of people, they don't buy products, they buy photos. And so they can't touch the product. They don't know the product. You have to sell them in the imagery. Good copy is important for ranking and keywords and all that. And some people will read the copy. Most people skim it or they don't read it. They look at the pictures. So what I did is I created a bunch of pictures where I actually had cartoons made, and I did split screens. So the cartoon on one side would be a bunch of dogs driving through like a McDonald's. And, they're in a car driving to, it looks like a McDonald's, and it says the dollar menu and bully sticks, by the other companies. And then the split screen was a bunch of dogs sitting around a table in a nice steakhouse with a maitre d' with a little tray, bringing them out on a little tray. So it painted that picture in the customer's mind. Like, these are quality. I want to give my dog the best. And then I would show stuff like, here's a machine spitting out these nasty like things. And then here's a contrast that with an image of a guy with a knife, carving them by hand, and then I would show mine are big and I don't stretch them to try to get more out of them. They're full, they're completely, the beef is all in there. Everything is in there for the dogs to love it. They're not like stretched and hollow and all this kind of stuff, and showed that. And I started selling. Now, could I rank on the word bully stick, which is a big popular, more generic term, but mm-hmm. I it was difficult at my price point to stay there. But where I could rank really well was like bully sticks, no odor, bully sticks made in the USA, the more longer tail keywords. And I was doing really well. So well, in fact, that the Best Bully Sticks was a big company. They're out of Virginia that had owned the market. They saw what I was doing. Like, how the heck is this guy selling 3 sticks for $55 when we're selling 30 for $30? And he's actually selling them. We're looking at his BSR. This guy's selling them. They came to me and said, we love your marketing. We love what you're doing. Let's partner. We want to do antlers. We want to do, duck treats and all that. So we ended up doing a whole line of other stuff. But the point of all this is, and I had guys on Subscribe and Save, that one guy, I think 70 something orders on Subscribe and Save. And I get the occasional complaint, what a ripoff. This is, 3 sticks. You got to be kidding me. But the positivity of like, these are awesome. My dog loves it. I don't have to worry about the stains. I don't have to worry about the smell.
Compared to all the negative reviews for the other products.
Yeah. I had influencers pull them out, and a guy, even on one of the influencers, he even like took a bite of it. I'm like, I didn't ask him to do that, but he did that. That's like showed people this is organic and this is safe. And it worked. Now I sold those for a couple of years and did well, but the price of meat started creeping up because China had a demand. This is a few years ago, China started having a big demand, and I just couldn't, I was getting squeezed too much on the margins, but that just shows it's marketing. All business is about innovation and marketing. It's principles. So those two things is what I did, is how did I innovate with an existing product that had high demand, and how did I market it, and how did I carve off a little niche of the market? That's what you got to do when it's product selection. Another big mistake people make is on how much money they spend. So they come into this and like, well, I heard about this Amazon thing. My buddy down the street's doing well. The guy at the church or synagogue's doing good with it. I want to give it a shot. I've got 20 grand. Let me see what I can do. I'm going to take a course and watch some videos, whatever. But the problem is they don't pick products correctly based on their budget. And this goes also for brands expanding whatever your budget is. They don't pick them properly. So if you got, my rule of thumb is you need to divide whatever your investment is by 2.5. More if you can, but by 2.5 at a minimum. So if I've got 20 grand, that means I've got $8,000 to spend. So 20 grand divided by 2.5 is 8,000. I've got $8,000 to spend, and that's the money that I should be looking, basing my product research on. The 8,000 is not just the cost of the product, but the 8,000 is the cost of the product, the taxes, maybe there's a tariff tax, the Trump tax, tariff duty. It could be added a 25-30% to the cost. Could be delivery. It could be it's delivery. It's the landing cost, basically. Mm-hmm. What is that landing cost? And so that's the $8,000 I have to work with. The other 12, some of that's going to go to marketing. Some of that's going to go to, if I'm successful, I'm going to have to place another order. And this order might be for more units than the first order because I'm doing well. And I can't, the worst thing you can do on Amazon is run out of stock. So if you run out of stock for more than a few days, it's, you're like, in some cases, starting over. You lose, you, yeah. Amazon's next guy in line. You're next. Sorry, you go to the end of the line. You got to work your way back up. It can be devastating. So you might have to be ordering more.
And the climb might be longer.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, so what happens is you need that money sitting there because you've probably, depending on your terms on your account, you're starting to sell and you're like, holy cow, I'm selling this, but Amazon's not paying me for 3 weeks. You know, there's a 1 week for them to ship it, then 2 week lag, depending on your account settings. And you, and then you, but you need to call the factory and say, put 30% down right away. If you don't have that money, then you, then you're SOL, and it screws you. And then, but on this 8,000, it's not just, okay, I found a product I can do for 8,000. You got to figure out what is the demand for that product? Where am I trying to position myself on the page? Am I trying to be the best seller? Which you should not be when you're first starting necessarily. You might position 3, 4, 5 oftentimes is good enough. Work your way up over time, but shoot for three to spot 3 to 5 on the main keywords, 5 or 10 keywords that you're going after. And it, what does it take to sell at that level? So if the guy in spot number 5 on a set of keywords is selling 20 units a day, for example, you know, okay, I need to beat him. I need to sell 21. So if I need to sell 21 and I'm manufacturing this in China, let's say you have a 1 month manufacturing time. You got a 1 month on the water time. You got 2 months for just dilly-dallying around and customs, whatever. So let's just call it 3 months. It takes 3 months from the time you say, make me some more, to the time they're sitting in Amazon's warehouse. So that means if you're selling 21 a day, you need to sell 21 a day, multiply that by 90 days, you're at about 1,800 units right there. You need to order, place an order for 1,800 units to have a chance, if that's your goal, is to hit that. And so out of that 8,000, you need to find something where landing costs to order 1,800 units, you might want to buffer that to 2,000 just to have some extras for promotion and buying reviews and stuff. You need to find something where it's basically a $4 landing cost. And that's the product you need to be looking at. Not that I found this great opportunity and I can spend all 8,000 and maybe that the landing cost is something, it doesn't make sense because you're not going to be able to fulfill it on the backside. And so that's a big mistake that people make, is not knowing their numbers and not really forecasting this out properly. And then having a successful product and then basically it blowing up in their face. Because they're not prepared, or they don't have a rich uncle that they can go to and get more money, or a credit card that they can do it on, or something.
I mean, one warning I want to also issue there is that because there's a lot of people who are trying to sell courses or entice you into Amazon selling, and they show you an ad, and I'm sure that you came across it on, for example, TikTok, right? Oh, look at this! These cups. These are 40-cent cups, and they're selling for $20.
Yeah, they leave everything Amazon. Out. Yeah, they leave all the storage fees, all the landing costs. They make it look like the margins are crazy. I mean, on Amazon, if you're doing private label, you should have margins between 20 and you should be shooting for 20%. There are people that get to 30, 35. This is bottom line after everything. That's what you should be shooting for. That's what the aggregators and the buyers like to see, is 20% or more.
Yeah, let's start, Kevin. Let's start at the top, right? For example, if an item, this is the way I do it, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it, right? I typically aim for a profitable product if it's 65% gross margin. Gross margin, not, you know, fully landed gross margin, about 65% or better. That's the 65 is the bare minimum.
Because 65 if you think, or 70, yeah, I would say. And another way to look at it is 5X. If your product manufacturing cost is $5, you need to be selling that for a minimum of $25. Now, this doesn't apply to really high ticket items. You can change these. This is sub $100 items, pretty much. The numbers change a little bit when you get into higher ticket items, but you need it. It's the old direct marketing rule. You know, the old catalog business and direct mail. It was when you're sourcing products to put, you know, before the internet, when you're sending physical paper through the mail.
I've done that business too.
some people back then would say 3X is the minimum, but really most people are shooting for 5X or more. one of my products, I sell wall calendars, and we print these in South Korea, and my landed cost is $1.58. We sell them for $19.95. They're light, they're small, they're, you know, 14 ounces. They're flat, they don't take up a lot of space. That's the other thing, is you got to look at, you know, what's the value per square inch of your product, because that's going to determine storage fees, shipping fees, you know, the
oversize fees,
the weight, you know, the weight and the dimensions.
Yeah.
How it's basically like, you know, a retailer looks at it, what's my sales per square foot of in my Walmart store. You need to know what's your sales per square centimeter or square inch on your Amazon product, and know those numbers, and that'll help you pick things that make more sense. Sometimes big things are great. You can have, nobody else wants to mess with them, so you can get a little monopoly there or do well. But there's a lot of things that you got to look at. So when you, like you said, when these YouTube people, you got to be very, they make it look sexy and easy, and they leave out tons and tons of costs. It's not just the cost.
Of course, it's only $100. It's just $100.
I did this, and look at my sales, my screenshots. People don't show screenshots as much as they used to. Used to be a big thing to show screenshots, but yeah, and they make it sound easy. And this is not an easy business. This is a wear a lot of hats. You got to know a lot about a lot of things, or you have to have people on your team that know a lot about a lot of things.
Be patient and willing to learn over time.
Yeah. So many people think I want to quit my job. I've been working 9 to 5. I heard people, you know, my buddy's making some money on Amazon. I heard some stories online.
I read Tim Ferriss's book.
I'm gonna quit and work the 4-hour week, and Amazon's gonna fulfill everything and do everything. But don't get me wrong, Amazon's fulfillment network is probably one of the best inventions in business of the last 100 years. Their distribution and fulfillment system is amazing. And the leverage it gives the little small guy against the big guys is incredible. And it's massive opportunity. So people say, has Amazon jumped the shark? Is Amazon, is it too late? No. When's the best time to get an Amazon? Right now. Was it better 5 years ago? Yeah, it was easier, less people, less competition. But
we don't have a time machine, though.
But look at this. Amazon, according to Marketplace Pulse, I think the total gross merchandise value on Amazon is about $700 billion last year, is what they're estimating. Out of that, something like 65% was third-party sellers like us, which is, what's that number, 400 and some odd, 450, just call it 450. I'm doing quick math in my head. 450. So we're the dominant player. But Amazon's sales since 2019, so pre-pandemic, a year before the pandemic, have doubled. That was $350 billion 5 years ago. Are there more people competing? Yes. But is there more depth? Can, you know, 5 years ago, if I was selling left-handed bats for one-eyed people, you know, there might have been 10 people that were going to buy it because Amazon didn't have traffic. Now there's 150. So those little niche markets that were not worth attacking before, now because of the massive volume and stuff, are worth attacking. So there's tons of opportunities on Amazon for it. It's a great opportunity, but understand this is a long-term play. It's not a quit my job tomorrow. You know, one of the best examples is a couple I know, David and Leah Cups. They started selling, they got into the good time, 2014, I think it was. 2014, he was in medical sales. He kept his job, so he had insurance, and they had he was making six figures a year, low six figures probably. She was a stay-at-home mom raising their two kids, and she designed some baby products like placemats or something. And they decided to launch those on Amazon. The first year, I think they did like $80,000. The next year, they did like $350,000. The next year, they did like $1.2 million. And in 2017, I was there in Vegas at a Prosper show with them. When they were celebrating by going to a Michelin star restaurant, they just sold their company for $4 million. And wow. He didn't quit his job for over a year and a half. And they were doing this on the side. She was raising two kids, doing this on the side. It was a long-term play. So it took them 3 years. But what did they do with that? They used the leverage. That's the beauty about this business, is they had a non-compete. They couldn't do any baby-specific products. But they're like, we know how this game works now. We know how this engine works. Let's take out this $4 million. Let's take a million of it, or I don't know what the exact numbers are, but let's take some money and set it aside for our retirement investments, for the kids' education, and just buy a nice house. But now we started before with $20,000. Now we can start with $100,000 or $200,000, come out of the gate swinging, because we know what the heck we're doing. Let's launch another brand. So they launched another brand. 2 years later, 18 months later, they sold it for $7 million. Wow. And they did it again in 2019, started another one. In 2021, I think it was, they sold it for $14 million. And now they're on their fourth one. And they took a little bit of time off in between, but the leverage that you can get by doing that is massive, but it's a long-term play. In fact, I mean, that's what most people don't think about. Is they think about, they just need to pay their rent. So I'm going to start this business because I don't want to work for the man. I want, instead of working 40 hours a week, you're going to be working 80 hours a week. So just understand that. Not sitting on the beach, listening to the cash register ring.
You're not going to be making videos next to a Lamborghini or your boat.
I mean, you might be, but it's rented Lamborghini and it's a rented boat. And don't get me wrong. I mean, people that are successful.
Standing on a toxic land.
The people that are successful, they're making a lot of money. They have a lot of cash flow. They like to, they work hard, but they play hard. You go to some of these parties at Prosper and some of these other shows, and there's some expensive partying going on. And there's some people that aren't afraid to spend, but you can do well, and there is money to be made, but it's a long-term play. And I think a lot of people don't quite understand that. And they get caught up with these videos that you see that it's a get rich quick thing. And it's not, I mean, I'm not going to say there's not the winning lottery ticket. Someone hits it right place, right time, right moment, you know, sunglasses for solar eclipses, and you're the only guy that's approved to sell them or something. You make bank really fast, but those are rare. Don't expect that.
So you talked about niching down, and that's what I wanted to have the show actually dispel some of those things. Not every niche is great.
No.
Right? So no. What are some of the failures that you have seen or lessons learned from, well, whether it was your students or yourself, that some niches just don't work, you know?
Well, the money is made in the sourcing in this business, not necessarily selling. So you've got to find a competitive edge on sourcing, whether that's a different country, a way to save. Because if any market that's successful might be good when you look into it, but there's other people using the same tools and the same things, and they're going to find it too. So you've got to have as the prices suppress, you've got to have an advantage somewhere. And it's either with your marketing, like an example I gave earlier, or that's within your sourcing and your pricing and your logistics that you could save on that. And so that's an important thing, that a niche that's super competitive can be all about a race to the bottom. So you have to be careful. You know, there's a guy that sold, Aaron's his name, Aaron Cordovez. He is the number one selling garlic press on Amazon, doing $1.3 million a year in sales on this one garlic press on Amazon. He launched it in 2019 after the garlic press was already kind of like a famous example in a lot of courses. He said, I'm going to prove a point here. I'm going to launch this, and I'm going to show that it can still be done. It took him a year and a half of losing money, deliberately losing money, positioning it on ads and lowering the price before he could actually gain that number one position and actually flip it. You look at Amazon. You know, Jeff Bezos was famous for going, I think it was Leno or Letterman, one of those shows like 10, 15 years ago. And someone, they asked him like, so Amazon's been around for whatever it was at the time, 15 years, and you've never made any money. He's like, started laughing. He's like, haha, no, we haven't, but we will one day. And now look at him now. You know, it takes some time on some of these categories. But when you're looking at a niche, there has to be demand. So you might have a brilliant idea for a product, and like, this would be great. I love this. I show my friends. They all think this is a great idea. And maybe it is a great idea, but is there demand for that? Or is there a demand that you can piggyback off of on Amazon? Because most of us don't have the budgets of the big brands to go out there and educate. We don't have the budgets of an Apple to put out a $4,000 goggle system and educate people on why you should buy this and how you should do this and spend millions or billions of dollars doing $7 million Super Bowl ads and everything else to put. We got to piggyback on this demand. And so you need to find where there's a demand and where there's opportunity in that demand. So and the demand doesn't have to be great. A lot of people always go after the big keywords, but sometimes keywords that have 1,000 searches a month can be really good keywords because they're niched down. They're what's called long tail. So it might be 3 or 4 or 5 keywords in a phrase, and those can have no opportunity, but no competition. So it's a great opportunity, but those words, the conversion rate on those is typically higher. So if you have a word, you know, like bully sticks, it's got, I'm just making this up, 50,000 searches a month on Amazon for bully sticks. The conversion rate might be, I don't know what it is. I'm just throwing them 10%, let's say. So 10% of the people that search that are end up buying bully sticks. So that's 10,000 orders. That's not bad. But on bully sticks made in the USA, no odor. It's a very long phrase, very specific. Maybe there's only 1,200 people a month searching for that. let's make the math easier, 1,000 people. 1,000 people a month searching for that. The conversion rate on that might be 50%.
Yeah, 40%, yeah.
Or 40, 50%, something like that. So there's 400 or 500 people going on that. If you can position yourself on that, which is easier to do, easier to rank on because it's lower, easier to position yourself. If you can position yourself in the top two or three or one to three spots on that, you could grab a significant portion of those 500 monthly sales. Say it's 200 of them. And then you find four or five or six, 10 other keywords that are similar to that, and you can do the same thing. Then you have something. Then by adding all those up, you're selling a couple thousand units a month, and you don't have to worry about someone coming in and knocking you down on price. You don't have to worry about some black hat guy coming in and changing your photos or doing some malicious thing to you to try to kick you out of the spot. You just go about your business and make some money. And that's where the opportunities are, but you have to have that demand. You can't educate right now. You can use tools like Brand Analytics, and there's Trendster and other tools, Google Trends and stuff, where you can see what's coming. But other people are watching that too. But on Brand Analytics, you can see keywords that will rise. A perfect example of this is during the pandemic, we sold hand sanitizer. And one of ours was a little handheld, like 2-ounce little bottle, put in your purse or your pocket. And when we started selling that, we were selling it as portable hand sanitizer or hand sanitizer. I can't remember all the keywords, but basically portable or for your car or something like that, all these keywords. But I started noticing Brand Analytics, which is one of the tools inside Amazon you get access to if you're brand registered. I started seeing this keyword. We were monitoring the million plus keywords that are in there that Amazon gives you data on. This keyword started showing up about 6-8 months in, hand sanitizer party favors. I'm like, wait a second, people are buying these as party favors because people are coming to the house for Christmas parties or for New Year's parties or birthdays, and they're passing out hand sanitizers or have a bucket at the front, pick one up, and that they start searching for that. That keyword started climbing from like 1,100,000 to 980,000 and so on. I was like, we need to get in on that. So we did. We adjusted our listing and we were able to be number one almost overnight on that keyword. Instead,
put in a photo of people partying
put a photo of people partying, and instead of selling. Our pack was a three. It came three in like a box, and we sold cases. So cases of 24. Just ship them out in the case box, and it worked. It's always evolving. This is not a business where you figure it out, you do your homework, and then you sit back. You got to constantly be monitoring, and it's evolving. New keywords are appearing. Old ones are going away. Competition's coming in. So it's not a game for the faint of heart.
So let me now switch gears to the beginner. One more question there. What I find a lot of beginners, it's a rude awakening for them when they find out or they realize that they know nothing, zero, about logistics.
Yeah.
They found whatever, AliExpress, Alibaba, they found some kind of distributor to do the thing with the product. Then they, got the listing up, right? The listing is up and they start selling. But then complete black box logistics, no idea what's going on there. So what lessons do you have learned from like failures and resilience?
Most people don't know the difference between UPS and USPS. They think they're the same thing, or FedEx. You know, I don't know how many times the mailman or my old mailman used to tell me, or I drop off at the back dock of a post office, and there'd be a little a basket sitting over there with FedEx stuff, and like people dropping the FedEx at the post office. It's the same thing. But yeah, people don't understand logistics. Logistics is, you can lose a lot of money in logistics. One, in just cost and not knowing the difference between air freight and sea freight, and all trains and trucks and everything else. But you can also lose a lot of money in logistics because of global things. Pandemics can come in and crush logistics and delay things. And we saw that happen in 2020 with everything going crazy and ships backed up in the port of the port of LA and Long Beach, just sitting out there waiting for a month sometimes to get a spot. You see natural things like right now what's happening in the Panama Canal, where the water's low. And only certain ships can actually go through the Panama Canal right now. Less ships can go through. There is a wider Panama Canal, but they're having issues with how many ships can go through because of low water flow. And you look at things like what's happening in the Red Sea, you know, with the terrorist stuff. People are having to go around this tip of South America, instead of cutting through. You look at the what's that ship, the Evergreen, that in the Suez Canal that stopped it up. You know, there's all these kinds of things on logistics that are out of your control, and you got to plan for those. And most people don't plan for them, and it can add significant costs to the people that had those ships, that stuff on the Evergreen. Some of them had insurance and they got, you know, reimbursed, but other ones, they're sitting there, they got money out of their pocket. It's just not making them any money. And then logistics, you know, another thing is mastering that is, it's called inventory turns. And so you look at someone like Walmart, the stores, the free retail stores, their inventory turns are 8.3. That means on average, everything in that store is getting turned over 8.3 times a year. So it's going out the door and new stuff is replacing it 8.3 times a year. So that's what's that math, like every month and a half, roughly, stuff is moving out. You know, whatever, if something's been sitting there for more than a month and a half, it's below average seller. Same thing happens on Amazon, and the same thing, you got to know how long does it take logistically to get it in from wherever you're shipping? How long does it take for Amazon to process it? Depending on if it goes UPS, could be in fairly quickly. If it goes by truck, LTL, which is cheaper in most cases, it could be weeks to get, you know, some warehouses backed up appointments. The cost and the organization of the speed and the line that you use can make differences.
Chinese New Year.
Chinese New Year.
That's a new surprise for a lot of new sellers.
A lot of new sellers, China shuts down for basically 3 weeks. You know, you'll have the office shuts down for about 5 to 7 days. You'll have some of the salespeople kind of hanging around. But the core of everything is basically 3 weeks. And you got to plan for that.
Engine is shut down for 3 weeks.
Rates go up. There's other Chinese holidays, you know, that affect that too. The Dragon Boat Festival is like 3 days. And there's several that can affect that. You look at, you say, okay, heck with it. I won't source in China. I'm going to Vietnam. Well, they have some similar holidays and stuff too. So does India. So I'm going to go to Mexico and get it closer. I'm not going to pay on the ship. I'll just truck it across the border. Okay, great. But there's cartels you got to pay off. You know, and there's things involved.
There are some realities you have to face.
There's realities you have to face that a lot of people don't. And then on the inventory turns, they have a profitable product. I'll give you an example. I used to sell a crepe maker, and this is a nice crepe maker. I differentiated. I had really nice packaging, nice photos, everything. And I sold this crepe maker. It made me a profit. I was selling, I don't know, it was 20 a day or something, 15 a day, maybe 15 a day. Wasn't a huge number, but every one of those was a profitable sale. But I would have to order, I think it was 1,000 or 1,500 units at a time. It would take me about 6 months, whatever the math worked out to be. Yeah, that's about right. 15 a day is, maybe it's less than that. But whatever it was, the math worked out, whatever I ordered, 2,000 units, took me 6 months to sell them. It's profitable. So in 6 months, I would order some more and just kept selling it. But I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm tying up my money for, you know, whatever it cost me, say 20 grand for production. I'm tying up 20 grand for 6 months to make a $10,000 profit, let's say. What if I could find another product where I could tie up my money and get more inventory turns? I could tie up my money for 6 weeks or 2 months and the same 20 grand and make that same 10,000, turn that $20,000 into 30,000 in 2 months, and then do it again and then do it again and do it again. Look at the multiplier that you make on your profits. So I have a rule for me that if I have a product that's not making at least $3,000 bottom line contribution after all expenses per month, it goes out the window. Now, some people don't do that. They're like, well, Kevin, that's stupid. If you put together 100 of those or 1,000 of those, you got a pretty profitable business. Yeah, but you also got a lot of headaches. You got a lot of inventory management. You got a lot of people. You got a big warehouse. You got a lot of just crap.
It's like having lots of children. Do you think it's going to be easier?
Yeah, I don't want to deal with it. So my goal in this business is, some people's goal is they get caught in the Western mentality of make more money, make more money, make more money. I want to be the next billionaire, 100 millionaire. Or whatever. For me, that's not what it's about. There's people in this business that sell a heck of a lot more than me, and good for them. Good on them. I'm glad. If I helped them in some way, awesome. But that's not my goal. My goal is I'm seven figures a year selling on Amazon. And I think it's important. I do a lot of teaching, a lot of speaking. You know, I have the course. And if, like you said, the YouTube people, a lot of these people are failed sellers. They're the people that tried it and like, oh, I can't sell. Let me sell digital air. Let me sell the dream instead of selling the process of doing it. And that's what they go to. Now, there are some legit ones out there, but the vast majority of them are failed sellers. And so they're teaching you. So I think it's important to keep my hand on the pulse And so I still sell, but I'm seven figures a year. And why? That makes me enough money to do what I, to live the life and have the freedom that I want. I'm able to make a lot of money doing the other stuff, you know, the teaching and the events and things like that. That supplements that. And I enjoy doing that more. But I'm not, I have no desire to hit $100 million. I don't want that. I've been there with an office with lots of employees, with lots of overhead and, you know, all the riffraff that goes on managing that. Even if you're at the top, I just don't, that's not me. That's for some people. Great. Go do it. But I'm about a lifestyle. I create my business around my life, not my life around my business. So many people create their life around their business. And they're chained to that. And I don't do that. Like, what is it I want to do? Do I want to travel? Do I want to have this kind of car, live in a penthouse? Or what do I want to be able to buy a $4,000 Apple Vision Pro when it comes out and not have to squint an eye? Yes. Do I want nice toys? Yes. So what do I need to do to do that? And that's what my goal. It's not about, am I better or have more money than the guy down the street or have a nicer car? If I want a nice car, I'll get a nice car. But it's about a lifestyle and being happy and enjoying what you do. And too many people get caught up in the Western way of it's all about more, 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 more. And that's just, for most people, you're just going to be miserable.
Yeah, I mean, if that's your goal, my advice to them, right? If the goal is you want to buy the dream, you think that that's the reality is it's a lot of hard work, right? If that's what you're aiming for, not that you want to have this sort of a brand and you want to grow it and sell it and learn from it and stuff like that, keep your corporate job, keep your 9-to-5 job. It has your insurance. It has your paycheck hitting your Chase Bank every 2 weeks. You have certainty, because the thing is, this life has a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah,
right? A lot of uncertainty. Even when you think things are certain, unless you learn from that experience and you bring some certainty to uncertainty, the reality is that's your life every day, right? Yeah. And if you don't get it, and you like the routine of 9-to-5, leaving your house at 8, get to work at 9, you know, have your lunch at 12 o'clock, leave work at 5. Don't listen to any of the other stuff, you know, because life is not going to, you think life is going to be easy? Oh yeah. Like Gary Vee says, right? Eat shit now and then caviar later. That shit eating period could be 3 years. It could be 5 years, right?
Maybe it was about 15 years.
I mean, 15 years, right? And then you can have caviar. But if you think that, oh, I'm going to do this for 90 days and I'm going to get it up there and boom, it's going to replace my paycheck. No, keep your job. Do this as a side hustle. Figure it out. Learn from it for 18 months. And then once you see that now you're replacing your paycheck, then switch over.
Yep, I agree.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it took me a long time. You know, I used to be, every night back before the internet, I'd be calling the bank. I figured out that at 2 a.m. in the morning is when they reset the accounts. So I would write checks knowing they're a hot check, you know, because I was robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I'd be like, at 2 a.m., I was up. You know, I was a late night person, so I'd be up, and I knew at 2:01 I could dial the number 1-800 whatever, and you know, last five checks that cleared, all right, I had a little piece of paper, and I would keep track. And like, oh, thank God this one didn't. Thank God that one, I'd get the money in there. And if one of them was pending, I would be like, oh shoot, that's Johnny's payroll check. That cannot go back. So I'd be at the bank the next morning at 9 a.m. with the bank manager saying, I have the cash here. You know, I had another because it money posted to another account. So I could overnight, so I could take the cash, and it was a struggle. You know, I was sleeping on a couch for years. It took a while to reach the point. But the thing is, like I said, with the example of David and Leah earlier, and you kind of just hinted at it too, the most money you make in this business is not running the business. Maybe you want to set up this business and you want it to be a legacy for your kids or for your family, and that's okay. But honestly, if you can set this up from day one with the intention of selling it, especially private label, it's harder to do with wholesale or some of the other business models. There's a lot of business models around Amazon, but with private label, where you're building a true brand, and a brand is not just a name or a logo. A brand is how someone feels when they hear that name or when they buy that product. Yeah. When if you create a true brand and it's a great platform to start on, and to launch from. And you should expand off of it at some point, but start on Amazon. If you want to start on Shopify or somewhere else, that's a whole different business model, a whole different way of doing things. But Amazon's a great place to start and build that and then sell it. When you sell it, you know, my friend Scott Dietz from Northbound will say, you get 60 to 70% of all the money you're ever going to make off this business the day you sell it. And just look at the example of David and Leah. If they would have just kept running their baby business, maybe now they would be doing, you know, they're doing 3 million in sales or 3 million sales when they sold it 4 years in. Maybe now they'd be doing 10 million or 12 million. And maybe, you know, their profit margin's 20%, 25%, let's say. And that's $2.5 million a year, but you really aren't taking that and putting it in your pocket because you're reinvesting it to grow and you're doing things. So let's say they're putting $1 million a year in their pocket. You know, that's nice. That's a nice payday for a lot of people. They're totally happy with that. But that was 2017 when they sold that. So this is 2024. So 7 years on, eight years on, they would have $1 million a year. They would have $8-10 million, you know, is what they would have made. And they're living off of that. But look at what they did by selling it, by leveraging it, selling one for four, selling the next one. Now they got whatever the number is, $20 million. They've doubled their money. And that's the way to think about this is use this massive system Amazon's built to build you a little empire and leverage it. And just like you would in real estate or something else, and use that leverage as a multiplier and a compounder for you. And that's where you're going to make money.
I mean, from your experience, you know that, Kevin, that when the businesses grow and they're growing, they come with growing pains also, oh, yeah. Right? So oh, yeah. for that couple, if they kept on operating it, it would come with new growing pains, which they may or may not be ready for.
Yeah, so anybody can get a business.
Even that estimate that you're giving that, oh, it may scale up, continue scaling.
It may not.
What worked at 5 million does not work at 7.5 and 10 million, right?
It's easy. Honestly, it's fairly, if you do it right, it's not super hard to get to $1 million in sales on Amazon. If that's your goal and you do it right. Now, a lot of people don't reach that because they don't do it right. But if you know your numbers and you do some of the stuff that we've talked about here and do it properly, it's possible to do that. But once you go from one to, like you just said, to 5 to 10, it's a whole different animal dealing with people and employees and structure. And it changes your whole logistics setup. And, then going from 10 to 25 million, that's another leap. And most of us are entrepreneurs. We're in the weeds. We're the hustlers. We're the grinders. And it's a different mindset and a different type of person that it takes to actually run at that level. And it's corporate structure. I mean, I look at it. Helium 10 software is a good example. I do the podcast called the AMPM podcast for Helium 10. That's the training that you mentioned.
Great content, by the way. Everybody should definitely check it out. I'm a subscriber, by the way. Oh, love your content.
It. Yeah. That podcast, I do it for them. That's what got me my start. You know, in 2016, I was just selling. I launched five brands. I was just selling. There's a Facebook group where Manny had for the podcast, and people were posting some stuff in there that was just flat wrong. And I was like, I can't keep letting people just parrot this and everybody thinks this is the way it works. It doesn't work this way in marketing. So I went in there and basically called BS on everybody. And Manny liked it. He asked me to come on his podcast. I said, no, I'm just a seller. He said, no, come on. So I went on his podcast and I just said it like it is. And nobody else wanted to say it like it is, warts and all. And, you know, they wanted to sugarcoat it. And it just resonated. So that exploded into me being on a lot of podcasts and speaking at events and doing the training and all this kind of stuff. But when they first started in 2016, it was him and another guy. They were working out of their houses, and they had a couple of VAs in the Philippines. But as they took off, it became, we got to get a WeWork office. Now we got 10 employees. Then it went to 30 employees. Then it went to 50. Now I was just at an event last week with Bradley. We just shot Freedom Ticket 4.0. We just redid it. So it'll be coming out in March, a whole brand new version. A lot of the content's the same, but we reorganized it and brought it up to date on some stuff. It made it a little bit easier to consume quicker. But we were at an event for PacView. PacView ended up buying, or actually a company called Assembly bought Helium 10 in 2019. So they had a big exit. And then they bought a company called PacView and a couple other companies, the Assembly, this aggregator, SaaS aggregator. And then they did another like sell and raise money where they changed the name from Assembly to PacView. But the PacView was having a little party, and all the executives were there from all over the world, from Japan and from all, just like a three-day, like their own little convention for their own salespeople and their own people. And I'm looking around this room of 60, 70 people. I'm like, man, look at what they created, and look at what started with these little entrepreneurs, and now they're at this level, and this is a $100 million plus company. It's valued, I think, at $1.4 billion or something like that right now. Look at what's created, what it's taken to each step of the way to move up, and most of us aren't equipped to do that. And so find what you're best at, get it to where you can, then get out of the way, take some chips off the table, and then go do it again, what you're best at.
Yeah, I mean, knowing, like, if you're really good at giving birth, raising it up to a certain level, hitting that $1 million mark, it's ready, let's sell it, right? Mm-hmm. And then keep on repeating the cycle, right? Yep. Right, because the thing is, like I said, you know, if you go above a certain number, maybe you're not, you cannot operate in that. It's great for that couple, especially, and that there's a great advice in that. If you're really good at that, just stick with that part right there, right. You know, and you can keep on repeating it, recycle, rinse, recycle, repeat, you know, just keep on repeating that cycle.
Now, there are some people that start selling and then they realize, hey, you know what, I really like dealing with PPC. So I don't really like the selling and logistics part and sourcing, but I'm really good at the numbers and the PPC. So they start a PPC agency, and there's some good agencies that have started as a result of
that. You had a lady on your AMPM podcast. I actually listened to that episode, that she started as a housewife and she started doing this in her house, and then realized that she's really good at PPC. I forgot her name.
Elizabeth Green. Yeah, she's good. That kind of stuff can happen. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's people that end up being good at logistics, you know, and they started a logistics company like Chelsea Cohen, you know, is so stocked with inventory management and logistics. And so there's people you can branch off, and you can find what your passion is or what your superpower is and double down on that. There's nothing wrong with that. So you don't have to keep selling. You may find that you look at Vanessa Hung, she's a master at flat files. You know, she sold for a little while. She's like, this is not for me. I don't like dealing with all this stuff, but I love looking at Excel spreadsheets and figuring out how to import this stuff in Amazon and figure out why something's not working right. That's her thing. And now she's the master at that. So there's a lot. The thing about this whole Amazon thing is there's a massive ecosystem around it. So it's not just selling. You know, there's lots of ways to sell. You can sell private label. You can sell wholesale. You can do affiliate marketing. You can do influencer marketing.
You could be a finance company.
Print on demand. You can do, you know, look at all these finance companies that have sprouted up to finance sellers. There's so many things in this orbit in ways to make money. And there's probably some things that we haven't even thought about yet that's coming, you know, around the AI. There's going to be some sort of, I don't know.
How about the fleet?
Yeah.
You could become an Amazon driver and own a route.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, you could buy, you know, the Amazon has become now the number one. They're beating out UPS and FedEx are having to lay off people because Amazon has taken market share from them. And now Amazon's expanding in certain markets. They're doing a test where you can ship with them instead of UPS or FedEx, and they'll deliver it. They're crushing those, and it's Amazon and FedEx are both having to adjust. Who used to depend on them heavily? The post office made some adjustments on the way they're doing some things, and they quit shipping stuff by air and priority mail. A lot of that's UPS Ground Advantage and stuff now. And they're actually, I just saw a story, they actually have done a little bit of a turnaround and increased the profits. But it's constantly an evolving industry. It's constantly changing. What works now, that's the thing, like you said earlier about the YouTube, look at the data of that video. If it's more than 6 months old, it may not be relevant anymore. Amazon's drastically changing. And what worked 5 years ago, or some guy that's teaching you a course that hasn't sold since 2017 doesn't know what's going on.
So let's talk about the algorithm, A9.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? What are like misunderstandings that you see sellers have and any setbacks from your experience?
Well, number one, there is only one algorithm. It's the A9. You'll hear some marketing people say, oh, the new algorithm, Amazon made changes in the way you rank. It's called the A10 now. That's bogus. It's A9. It's always A9. There's 9 letters in algorithm. That's the wives' tale of how it got named. That's what it's called. There is no A10, but it does evolve. The best way you can monitor this is Amazon tells you kind of what they're testing. It's science.amazon.com. So it's a website that Amazon puts out, and all their data scientists and their geeks will go and talk at different conferences around the world, different IT conferences, and they'll kind of give you a hint. So you can get some insights there, but nobody knows the secret sauce. There's a handful of people, you know, nobody knows the formula to Coca-Cola. So like three people or whatever, and nobody knows the formula on A9, but we try to reverse engineer it the best we can. And it's constantly changing. You know, things that used to be add to carts and add to wish list, and you could rank by doing this and that. A lot of that stuff, Amazon's constantly adjusting it. The if you want to look at the data science, I think it's Howard Tai has a Signalytics put up, dumped all 150 or some odd science papers into a custom GPT where you could ask it questions. And it's pretty cool, actually, where you can ask it questions. But it's right now, A9 is what controls what's seen on Amazon. It's what controls, does your product surface when this word is typed? And there's a ton of variables in that. One is how well you've sold on the platform, how relevant your listing is, how relevant your photos are, how you compare to other people. Did you send outside traffic to it from Facebook or Google? What is your price? Did you just buy an ad? There's about 500 variables or maybe even more that we know of that all have a different weighting factors on.
And on top of it, Kevin, you have to add on all the template testing that Amazon does.
Yeah.
In different parts of the page constantly. Yeah. So two people may be looking at completely different sets.
Exactly. There's
how things are positioned. Yeah.
Yeah. There's geo targeting. There's random split testing. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on. I mean, your inventory used to be, if you had 1,000 units in Amazon, you had 1,000 units in Amazon. If 900 of those were sitting in California and 100 of them were sitting in Florida and somebody in Chicago ordered it, one of those two warehouses would ship it up to them. And, you know, they put it on a plane or Prime Air or on a U.S. commercial plane or a FedEx plane, excess capacity, and it'd get up there in a couple of days. Amazon has switched from that national distribution system to a hub and spoke. So now it's like, I think it's 8 regional warehouses. So if my product out of those 1,000, you might send it in when Amazon directs you to 2 places. You might send it to California, you might send it to Tampa. But then Amazon, it's called a cross dock. So those places you send it in don't store it. Most of them don't store it. It's in and out, but it's in. They have an algorithm that says, oh, we need, based on previous demand or similar products, if they don't have a history, or just guessing if they don't have a history, we need 13 of these in Miami, 27 of them in North Carolina, 60 of them in Nashville, and they'll disperse them out. That's when you see it says transferring, or they're transferring it based on their algorithm.
It could be 50 now, different warehouses.
Yeah, it could be 200 different warehouses. Yeah. Now they're doing it more regional. So if I'm in Miami, and the Tampa warehouse or the Miami warehouse doesn't have my product, the closest one is Houston, Texas, they don't even show me as an option, or it's way down. It's maybe down on page 5 or 6 or something that nobody scrolls to, because they want to. So you have to get ahead of this, and you have to do distributed network logistics and make sure that this stuff, and sometimes you got to ship it directly there yourself if you know the numbers, instead of and bypass Amazon or ask Amazon to do it. There's a lot to that. So that A9's constantly factoring in stuff like this. The biggest change we're going to see right now, I believe, is with AI. You know, Amazon's tested this a little bit with helping you write listings, and it's kind of messing it up for the most part. They're doing it with the reviews, where they'll analyze reviews and say this is the general sentiment. That's not so bad, but it's still not perfect yet. They'll get that better. The listing part's a major issue right now, where they think they know better, because we know in. They know better. You have to think of it. They know better from they're looking at it from a customer point of view. We look at it from how can we game the system and sell more point of view. They're not looking at it that way. We're looking at it that way. So it's screwing up our reverse engineering of the system. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change the system. We're going to have to start creating our listings for the AI. Like Vanessa Hung, she the flat files a few weeks ago changed, and they put them out in beta, and she started looking like, holy cow, what is going on here with these flat files? This is totally different. Amazon's preparing to make major changes. You know, recently they went from 250 characters to 500 and expanded that. I believe that you're going to have to start selling to the AI. So creating a more robust listing, not so much gaming the keywords of
how can you feed the model?
How can you feed the model? And some of that's going to be imagery. And nobody's thinking of talking about this right now, but Amazon is testing and analyzing the images. You can go to, I think it's comprehend.amazon.com. You can play with this a little bit. There's some other AI tools that will do this, but I did this as an example with my phone. So I don't have it on here now, but I have on my other phone, I have a little thing that sticks on the back, and they're like little reading glasses. I'm an old man, so I don't want to carry glasses in my pocket, but they just stick on the back, and I can just pull them off. Maybe I have Maybe I have
I need
one.
To get that for myself.
it's pretty, yeah, I don't have one just sitting right here. I would show you, but yeah, it's not sitting here, but it's pretty cool. But so what I did is I took a picture of this and I pushed the little glasses up just a little bit off to the side. And I took a picture as if I was going to show it as my product listing image on Amazon. And I told this AI tool, analyze this picture and tell me what it is. And it said, oh, this is a mobile phone. It's sitting on a counter. It's blah. It's black and white. And it's blah, blah, blah. And it's got a pair of keys, car keys on top of it or attached to it. I'm like, no, these are not car keys. These are little reading glasses. It totally misinterpreted. If the AI and the algorithm does that, it's going to screw up your listing. You're going to be in the wrong category, the wrong node. You're going to be not showing up for where you need to be showing up. It's going to penalize you. So people are going to have to start paying attention to how do I shoot my images? How do I make sure my images are perfectly clear to a machine reading them, that it knows exactly what that is? And how can I use my images to influence the keywords and everything on Amazon? I think that's going to be a major thing. Plus in video, it's going to be, I think we're in for, some of these software companies are in for a rude awakening in the next year, year and a half. The search is going to be changing. You know, they're testing this with Rufus right now on some mobile devices. I haven't seen it, so I don't know exactly how it works. I've just seen the little demos. But my expectation is that at some point it's going to get to where instead of typing, if you're taking a trip to the beach with your family and you're going to, say, Pensacola, Florida, you're going to be able to type in beach trip Pensacola, Florida. We're driving entire family or something like that. And it's going to know. Amazon has all this massive data on you. They know that you have light skin because you've always bought a bunch of sun protection or creams or cosmetic creams. We know that two of your kids are overweight because you're always buying the bigger chairs or the bigger size things or whatever. We know that, you know, in Pensacola in July, the temperature is typically this. It might rain, so you need an umbrella, and it's going to spit out everything. So instead of me having to go type in what's the best umbrella, or me think of what I need, it's going to tell me what I need. And that's a different way of trying to reverse engineer for rank. And how do you rank? And you lose some control on that. It's just like, you know, you lose some control of a ship going through, you know, it goes through the Red Sea. Oh, well, what do we do? How do we adjust? So there's going to be, I don't know what the answers are yet, but it's going to be interesting to see.
Take the example of the image AI that you just mentioned. Imagine if you take it a step further, if the AI understands the color composition that of an image that's shown that leads to better conversion, because ultimately Amazon wants to make conversion. They want conversion on their property and not somewhere else, right? It doesn't matter how many times you come back. They just want you to make the conversion there, right? If the color composition of your product imagery, your photography, does not meet those guidelines, you get deranked.
Yep.
Compared to another person who has actually shot a better photo, better video, that that the AI has deemed it more worthy for conversion, that gets better rank.
Yep. And you look at Prime TV. This is what Amazon's doing with Prime on TV, where you could advertise your products on Prime. And, you know, they tested it with a Black Friday, the Super Bowl game, you know, where you could buy stuff. It's going to be interesting where this goes with integrating entertainment with purchases. You know, Amazon ultimately is a data company. Yeah, they're not a product. Everybody thinks of them as you go there to buy stuff. That's where they make the least of their money, is actually on selling physical products. But it's the core of the hub of what all the data spins around. And so the data they have from Prime TV, from AWS, from selling ads, from what people are clicking, from what you've been buying, is powerful. That's why Temu right now is willing to lose a lot of money selling trinkets for cheap prices and getting into the U.S. They're building a database. They're building a massive database that they will then leverage. Look at Facebook or any of these. They're data companies. The money is in the data, in the customer list, in the knowing the behaviors, and you can twist and turn that into all kinds of opportunities down the road that we don't even maybe know exist right now. That something new's coming along, and that's where they're at. I mean, look at PPC. Was it $40 billion or so, almost in PPC for Amazon last year, but almost pure profit. That didn't exist 7 years ago. There was no PPC. They were having to make the money off of selling it. Look at Amazon now.
Just think about that, Kevin. That's just on platform. On platform is 40 billion. Imagine if Amazon decided, you know what? If Google and Facebook, Meta is making so much money with third-party advertising, let's do that. Yeah, that 40 is $400 billion.
They did that at one point. The Google had ads and stuff on there, but they took it away because Google was mining the data. Google was like pixeling it and like, and Amazon's like, no, you don't get to sneak in. They took that. There was Google like
AdWords. They safeguard their data very carefully. Amazon does that forever. Yeah,
It took it forever just to release. It took the threats by the government, basically, that they're using our data to create their own products before they released brand analytics and everything else and started saying, no, we're not hiding anything. But they still don't give you everything in there. There's third-party tools that will sometimes pull this API, mix it together. And like, ooh, look, if you do multiply this column by that column, what you get? Amazon could give us that. They know it. But you have to figure it out on the back way. So there's lots of change coming. This business is really good. E-commerce selling on Amazon is incredibly lucrative if you're willing to put in the time and the effort and you have the money. I mean, some people say, well, if I'm listening to this and I want to sell on Amazon, how much money do I need? It depends. You know, if you're in Pakistan and you need to change the life of your family, you might be able to start this with a couple $1,000s, because if you make $300 or $400 a month in profit that you can take out of the business after a period of time, that's life changing when the average wage is $500 or $600. But for me and you, you know, that's a nice steak one night. That's not going to really change anything. Or if you have a side hustle and you just want to do it for a vacation, okay. But if you want to make a true living out of it, then it's going to take some time. There's actually in the Freedom Ticket, I have a tool, a software program. It's from the people at Profit First for e-commerce. It's basically you fill in three things and it tells you like, if I need to make $60,000 a year, that's where to quit my job, I need to make $60,000 a year and I can pay my bills. If that's your target, my target's higher, but if that's your target, it'll tell you, you need this many products selling for this much at these margins. It'll give you a roadmap and a plan. And most people don't do that. They just quit. They just start, selling something and hope it works out. But they're like, you need a map. If you're going to drive from Austin to New York, what are the roads I need to take to get there? I just jump in the car and just stop every time I need gas and go, which way do I go? Which way is New York? Oh, it's that way. You need a map. And most people don't plan this out. That's why I said earlier, if you do this right and you can have a really good chance of succeeding and changing your life by doing this business.
Yeah, you have to sit there and actually come up with a plan to say, like, look, it could be completely wrong, but at least have a plan. A man with a plan. A man with a plan is better than no plan.
Yep. You got to start somewhere, and things change. You know, we all have a plan to get married and have two kids and travel the world, and some people do that, and some people have five kids and don't travel the world, and things change. You know, you're not the same person you were. They say every 10 years, you're a different person. You have a lot of some of the same characteristics, but you're a different person basically every decade in some way. Some of your interests or some of your things or morals or interests have changed. Some of them stay constant your whole life, but things change as you learn and gain experience and open up to things.
Yep. So let's talk about the $1 billion summit that's coming up. I'm going to be actually attending I'm going to definitely have it on for the virtual and the one in Kauai, Hawaii this year. Definitely. I'm going to be there.
Awesome. Be happy.
So I'm going to be there, folks. I'm not speaking or anything. I'm just going to be there attending the summit. Cause you know, one thing I've learned, Kevin, and I'm sure that you have the same personality, I'm learning every single day. Right.
And
I've been doing this for 25 years, every day I learn.
When you stop learning, you stop earning.
Yep.
So that's my philosophy, is when you could never stop learning. I agree. That's I'm glad to hear that.
So we will unveil the special offer. Definitely go to billiondollarsellersummit.com. Use code Sabir, my name, SABIR, and you'll get 10% off. Whether you want to attend, I think there's value in both of the summits. And Kevin, I would like you to explain the virtual versus and the dates and the in-person to the audience. Yes,
I'll be happy to do that. You know, with Sabir, I was sitting here thinking, you know, I just launched a brand new website, literally like 30 minutes before. I got to go fix a couple of little bugs that are on it right now. But 30 minutes before, I've always had this website in the past. It looked like a fifth grader did it in 1997. And it works because I just went off my name, but I decided, you know what, I need to have a fancy whiz bang website. You know, people are paying a lot of money. They, people coming off the newsletter. It's been several months in development and it's been pushing it right up to the edge. But since I just launched it, if you use that code instead of 10% off, I'm going to give you 25% off.
Wow.
So instead of 10%, I haven't offered this anywhere else. I'll make that offer until the end of February. So the code will work until the end of February. So if you wait a couple months and decide to come to Hawaii later, then you'll be paying the full price. But until the end of February, I'll do the 25% off with the code Sabir. But there's two events. So I do one's virtually, and that's happening February 20th. So next week, you guys are listening to this on Thursday. So yeah, it starts next Tuesday. It's like a half day. I'll be talking. Then we have a few of this introductory things. And then the core of it's on Wednesday and Thursday, the 21st and the 22nd. There's a schedule on the website where you can get a basic idea of how it works. But I have 18 speakers coming on. I hand select the speakers. They're not doing the same old stuff that you've heard on podcasts or seen them presented some other summit somewhere. We don't use Zoom. It's an interactive conference software. So there's a main stage. You get to go to a Q&A stage afterwards and ask them Q&A. You interact with the other people. We're doing a needs and wants. So everybody that's into that participates, it comes. You'll say, hey, my superpower, I'm really good at PPC. I suck at inventory. I need someone to help me with my inventory. So we're going to match people up. And you'll be able to go into a room and talk to people that can help you with your specific need, or you'll be able to help people. We do, I incentivize the speakers at both events with a cash prize. So they're bringing their A game because I give them $5,000 cash if they are voted best speaker.
That's very
$2,500 if they're second. And they don't want to be embarrassed because at the end I published a top 10 and I started at number 10. Number 10 was John. Number 9 was Sue. Number 8 was Sally. And if there's 18 speakers and you're not in the top 10, you know you sucked. And nobody wants to suck. It's an embarrassment. And so what happens is they're bringing their A game, usually sharing things that they don't share somewhere else. I mean, you get the occasional speaker that just, it happens. Somebody blows it. They don't care. But for the most part, they're bringing their A game. And I've seen these people speak and I know the content. I'm not just filling spots or they're not paying to speak. It's more of an honor. And then we do a hat contest. So it's a $2,500 cash prize. Anybody can participate in the audience. If you got some cool trick or some cool tool you're using that you want to share, you get 3 minutes. You have to submit them in advance. I pick the top 25 or so. And then you come on, you get 3 minutes to share it. And if you voted the audience winner of that, you can do a presentation or a live demo or just talk about it. If you, the winner of that gets $2,500 cash. So that's a big, people love that too. And then we're doing something on this one as well as a tools contest. We've never done that before. So there's a hat contest and then there's a separate tools contest. So this is some cool AI tool or some cool tool, you can say, this one is like saving me so much time in my product sourcing. I can take Walmart, Target, Amazon, Etsy, and whatever, and I can hit this button and it tells me, here's 7 cool product ideas. And everybody's like, wow, I never heard of that thing. Only, some guy just developed it and there's only 7 people in Romania using it. Everybody else now knows. So there's something like that. So that's the virtual one. It is recorded. So if you're not able to make everything live, you can get the replays. They come out about a week or so later. And then I do an in-person one. The in-person one, the virtual one's February 20th to the 22nd online. Do it from anywhere in the world. It's the in-person one's in Hawaii. It's in May 18th to the 23rd. It's a little bit, some of the same people come to both, but there's a lot of people that really like that in-person event because it's a whole different feel than online. You're hanging with people. You get to really know people. You're networking with them. And we don't just do another conference where you show up, you go into a classroom, you listen to some talks, and you eat some nice food. Those are fine. Nothing wrong with those. But we take it to another level where we really up it. So sellers are competitive mostly. Us entrepreneurs are competitive. So we do a lot of competitive things. So like in Hawaii, for example, we're doing almost an entire day. It's an amazing race. So have you ever seen the TV show, The Amazing Race?
Yep.
The problem is you go to a lot of conventions and you all you do is you see the convention hall, the hotel, and maybe a restaurant for a party. You're going to see you're going to see the entire island of Kauai from deserts to a Grand Canyon to 10,000 foot waterfalls. And you're going to be put into teams randomly. So it's not with your best buddy. You may not know some of the people on the team, and you have to work together to navigate across the island. And the winners of that get free tickets worth everybody on that team. So this is like a $20,000-$30,000 prize, gets a free ticket to the next event in Iceland next year. So wow. People are competing heavily. They want to win this, and you're working together, solving clues and doing cool stuff, and you're seeing the island, and you're making bonds with other people that you wouldn't have probably even talked to. And so we do stuff like that. There's several other things. We're doing a luau. We're doing, if this is your third event or more, we're having helicopters come to the hotel and pick you up and do an island tour by air and drop you into this Jurassic Park experience. And then everybody else will be taken by bus to a VIP dinner that hasn't been to three or more. So we're rewarding people that have been to several of these. We're doing, the way the room is set up is like a lounge. So you don't walk in, it doesn't look like a classroom or chair, uncomfortable. It's like a couch with two, like a love seat with two chairs and a little coffee table. And the vibe in there is like totally chill, and it's really conducive for learning. The speakers again are competing for prizes. We do the hat contest. We do the tools contest. And at the in-person one, we're doing a travel contest, a travel tip. So a lot of us travel a lot. So you might like, hey, if you know this credit card can get you extra points, or we know this way, it's just points.me is a really cool way to transfer your points, and you can add 80,000 extra points if you have an American Express and you do this, and then you step it over to here and you can like fly first class for half, you know, that kind of stuff. So we're doing that. And then we have mixers. We have a lot of cool stuff. And then after the BDSS, there's this another event. This is my first year to do it. It's called Level Up. So BDSS, the median seller at the last one in Puerto Rico was $13.5 million. Not the average, because one guy can skew an average, but the median seller was $13.5 million. So these are mostly advanced sellers. I mean, there's a few people that are newer, but they're mostly advanced sellers. I limit the number of sponsors to 10, and they're allowed to bring two people each. So you don't have a ton of sponsors and service providers, and it's mostly sellers. If a sponsor wants to buy a ticket and they're not a seller, they have to pay almost double the price. So that weeds a bunch of them out. I try to keep that balance. And then I'm doing something at this next one. So it'll be about 150 people in Hawaii.
Wow.
What I'm doing at this next one is people that want to stay. I'm doing something called Level Up. And Level Up is not about Amazon. It's about leveling up your game, leveling up your mind, leveling up your entrepreneurship. So I have seven speakers that are not going to be talking Amazon stuff. Some of it is mindset. Some of it is when you get to $300 million in sales on Amazon, what's that like physically, mentally? How do you deal with that? One of them's on social media. If you heard the AMPM podcast from that came out last week, a girl called McCall Jones was on that. She's talking about your attractive character, how to actually truly market yourself or your company avatar to really bang it out of the park. Gary Vee would love this kind of stuff. She's going to be speaking and doing stuff with one-on-one with people, like to really help you hone in your public persona, either as a person, if you're on the camera, or as a representative of your brand, or as a brand, the brand avatar. Then we're changing hotels. And so in between, we're taking everybody to the Grand Canyon. It's called Waimea Canyon in Kauai. And you're doing a 4-hour trip on the Nepali coast, where these sheer mountains come down into the cliffs of the ocean, and it's dolphins, and it's a dinner cruise. It's amazing, sunset cruise. And then we take you to cross the island to a totally different experience in Hanalei Bay, where at the one hotel. And in addition to these seven speakers, we're doing hot yoga, we're doing sound therapy, we're doing massage, we're doing cryotherapy, we're doing cacao tasting, we're doing some Chinese. So it's a lot of a really cool mix, and that's all inclusive. Everything is inclusive there. So about 30 to 50 people will probably stay for that. Not everybody. It's the first one I'm doing, so it's kind of an experiment. But it's to take your, you know, it's to take your game up, because I find when I go to a lot of conferences, and Amazon conference, to me, the content's usually blah, blah. It takes someone pretty impressive to impress me on stage. So I get the benefit out of the networking. But when I go to
the way, I noticed that some people try to impress you in the audience when you're sitting in the audience and they're speaking. They want your approval.
Yeah, my name gets called. I was just on a cruise, and I think there was five talks in a row where people said, like Kevin said, I was like, man, So yeah, it
I gotta meet this Kevin guy. Who's this guy, Kevin?
I never thought of it in that way, but yeah. But I'll go to something like Funnel Hacking Live, or I'm going to Dan Kennedy's Super Conference in May. He's like one of the top copywriters.
Yeah,
it's because I get ideas, and my background is marketing, not Amazon. I've been doing this game, marketing direct to consumer and direct marketing and stuff for 35 years. So I didn't start off as an Amazon guy. I came from the direct marketing world. And so I like taking those concepts of how can I, you know, I get good ideas by being in these other shows and hearing other perspectives and other people talk about funnels and attractive characters and other things. And so that's what I'm trying to bring a little bit to this space. And then we need to all sit back. We're all working hard. We're pushing ourselves hard. We need to take time out and take care of our bodies and take care of ourselves as well. So that's what I'm trying to do. And it's an experiment. It's called Level Up. And that's an option if you want to stay. Some people, that means you're there 9 days. It's too long for some people to be away. So, but we'll see what happens. And I'm excited about it. And then I have one more event in September. You'll see it on the website when you go to billiondollarsellers.com, called the Think Tank. And that's going to be in September in Austin. We've rented out this, it's called the Gatsby Mansion out on the lake. It's got a helicopter pad, pickleball court, 3 stories, 12 bedrooms. So I've got 12 people that are going to come, and they're going to sit in the hot seat. So if you're a seller and you're like, man, I'm stuck. We talked about it earlier. I'm stuck at $5 million. I'm trying to grow my company I want to hit 20 million in 3 years. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to hire the people. What systems do I need to put in place? How do I do the SOP? I don't know. So you'll be able to sit in the hot seat, and I'll curate. You'll tell me if you're one of the hot seat people, you'll tell me what your issue is. I'll curate 6 people from the Dream 100 first that I have, that I do in my newsletter. And then if I don't have somebody that knows this, I'll pull them from outside that world. And 6 people will sit there, and they will, for 2 hours, you'll be in the hot seat. So the first 15 minutes, you will say, this is what I am. My name is Kevin King. I've been selling Amazon for this long. I sell this much. These are probably basically facts. Just tell your biography and what you're doing. The next 45 minutes, that panel will ask you direct questions. There's a moderator to keep it on track. So they'll ask you direct questions. Well, how are you hiring? What's your process? Are you, what are you paying? You know, whatever it may be. And then the next hour is actual solutions. Like, okay, this is where you're screwing up. You need to do this, use this, do this, implement this, this CRM system. And by the end of it, usually the person in the hot seat's in tears. I haven't done one of these for Amazon. A friend of mine did one of these for internet marketing. It was brilliant. I was on the panel for 2 of them. And then he let me sit and watch a couple of the other ones. I couldn't speak. I couldn't participate. I could just sit in the audience and watch, or not in the audience, on a couch, you know, in the room. It's brilliant. So I'm like, I got to do this for Amazon. And so that's what we're doing. And so there'll be 12 people in the hot seats. There'll be, you know, when you're not in the hot seat, it's networking. There's fun stuff. There's a game. There's cigar room, a whiskey room. There's pickleball courts. It's cool to hang out and network. And then, or if you don't want to sit in the hot seat, you can pay a slightly less fee to come and be in the audience. But some people, when they're in the hot seat, they may say, I want it private. I'm going to be talking some stuff. I don't want this shared. Nothing is filmed, but they may not want an audience. So you might not be able to participate in all the audiences if someone wants it closed. But it's going to be a really cool networking and just action-packed, very specific, no presentations. Like, let's make a difference in people's lives and their business. That's called a Think Tank.
That's really valuable, especially if you're getting that panel that's like really experienced in this business, you know, and you're getting like rapid fire. You're getting all of the details out, all your pain points, and then they're giving you the solutions. Like, this is what you need to do. Great advice, you know, coming from a place of experience. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be game changing the way we're doing it. And you know, it's a little bit of a hard message to sell. You know, hopefully the website gets that a point across, this new website that I just did. But I think that and the Level Up event are gonna do well. So like, this year is Hawaii. Next year we're doing Iceland in March, and so we plan on doing the BDSS in Iceland, and then also a Level Up event after it. So it's cool. I like doing this. I like bringing people together. I like bringing like minds together, and you know, that's the best value, is just hanging out with other people that think like you, that you know, you can't talk to your family and your friends. You know, they look at you funny when you start talking about ACOS and tacos, and they're like, what? Were we eating? I'm like, no. I figured out this cool method where I can save like 2% on my tacos. And they're like, Good for you. That's nice. What's you know? But when you can talk to other people, they get excited about it. You know, that's always cool. So I like, one of my goals in life is I believe life is about the experiences you have and the people you meet. That's the two most important things. I've traveled to 94 countries. I've been all over the world, and nothing has changed me more than the experiences I had and the people I've met along the way. So if I can do that by creating these events, by giving people experiences they wouldn't otherwise have, and by letting them meet people that they wouldn't have otherwise met that can propel them in their business or in their life, that's my goal.
That's phenomenal. And by the way, thank you so much for upgrading that in real time. I mean, you told me 10%, and to come on the show and say 25% off, that's why I updated the message there. That is 25%. I'm quick.
You did.
Use code on billiondollarsellersummit.com. If you put in the code Sabir, my name, S-A-B-I-R, you'll get 25% off of the Billion Dollar Summit, both the virtual as well as the in-person one. So right. Definitely. And Kevin, phenomenal guest. Thank you for being on the show and dropping your knowledge here. You know, and I think it's kind of our responsibility, people who are in the weeds, and for us with the experience and the scars we have on our backs and no hair, you know, that we should share our experiences with the people, so that whether they're in the beginning of their journey, middle of their journey, or they're advanced sellers and they're making $10 million plus every year, that they should hear it from literally from the horse's mouth, right? Because of the experiences that we have had, and the brands that I run, or the clients that I have, and the scars that I have, and the same for you, you know, especially with 160,000 students and all the learnings you're getting from all the people that are working with you and you're interfacing with them, sharing that knowledge is, I think, is kind of our responsibility. I mean, that's how I see it, at least, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing that's more rewarding to me when, you know, I was at a Prosper show last year, and I was standing in line to go to one of the parties with Steve Simonson. And this guy comes up, or I was standing, and I hear a couple people back, someone going, "No way, no effing way, no way, no effing way." And I'm like, "What's going on?" Turn around, this guy's staring straight at me. And he's like, I'm like, "What?" He's like, "No way, it's Kevin King. You're right here. I took your freedom ticket course like 5 years ago, and now my company's doing $50 million in sales." I'm like, "Damn, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. That's you. I didn't do that, but I gave you the foundation, and any little bit of help I could give you and push you in that direction, I'm happy to have done that. And I felt that's my obligation." And he was very appreciative. And there's nothing more rewarding to me. So when you give back, and you know, if you're successful in something, everybody needs a helping hand. Giving back is one of the best things you can do. And especially if you're truthful and honest and transparent about it, not fake about it, then I think there's nothing more valuable out there. And it resonates with a lot of people. And if you can make a difference in just one person's life, then job well done.
I mean, this is one of the main reasons I have this show, to actually put out the right message, the right, this is not tainted with any kind of digital course for you to go. I don't have any links on This Week with Sabir for them to go and download my PDF or get into a digital course or anything, nothing. This is purely to deliver the right message and the truthful message, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, you know.
There is.
And misinformation leads to a lot of harmful debt on your credit cards because of bad advice that you listen to out there, you know. And some of it, you may have even paid $100, $1,000 for a digital course, and it's just the wrong information, you know. And it's not applicable, or it's very old information that's not really relevant anymore.
It's just like the freedom ticket. You know, we're on the, I just told you we shot the fourth one last week, and it'll be out in March. As we update it, you know, you have to keep it updated and freshen it up. And a lot of people don't. It's like you said, some course that was shot 6 years ago, or someone that did one now, that they're basing it on what worked long ago and not what's working right now. Because a lot of times, you know, what's that old saying? Those that can do and those that can't teach.
But some people clone and copy.
I think that's not necessarily true, but you can do both.
No, but some people clone and copy existing content and make it sound like their own, and they've never touched Seller Central in their life.
yeah. That's true.
Well, Kevin, thank you for being on the show and sharing your billion-dollar secrets. definitely, folks, head over to BillionDollarSellerSummit.com. Use code Sabir, S-A-B-I-R, to get 25% off. And thank you, Kevin, for upgrading the offer during the show. Really appreciate it, and really appreciate you being on the show and sharing your knowledge.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun. Always enjoyable.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you for tuning in, audience.